sights to show you.
Back to my point earlier, if this thing does take me out, you know, this Omicron or whatever, just avenge me. Go to the CDC and just with the axe that you weld with items around your house, please.
You want me to just imagine myself getting my cutlery and melting it down and making like the saddest hand axe ever.
Yeah. And do a line right before on the fucking axe.
Dude, just bury my face into a small mountain of cocaine. Are you kidding? Fuck yeah, I will.
Well, you know, if I, you know, only in this particular condition, but yeah, go for it.
Yeah, only if Omicron takes you out. Okay.
Yeah, hear yeah. That? Just so you can get the CDC
hear
for
that,
the,
police,
the faulty advice.
I'm free and clear any other circumstance.
Please, please. Our terrible connection already cut out the whole incriminating part of that sentence, so we're good.
Wait, really?
No, I'm tripping. Okay. I'm just messing around.
I was like, all the good parts?
Oh no. Okay, and I totally forgot to mark us on there, but I'm gonna do it right now.
You know what? That's fine. Just like while I'm introducing the podcast, you take care of that.
Totally happening. Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes. Hello, Anthony. Yes.
Who has been doing this for 4 years and still forgets to label our sections in the outline.
Totally, yeah.
Just lesson. So you can't teach an old dog fucking anything, I guess.
No. Also, just a heads up, we've been having technical difficulties for the last, I don't know, 10 minutes. So
yes.
if we cut out at random intervals this episode, apologies. I hope we make up for it in just pure chaos that this episode's going to just probably end up devolving into.
Yes, yes.
Do you want to go ahead and introduce what we're covering?
Oh, we are covering 2018's balls-trippingly crazy-ass Nicolas Cage vehicle, Mandy.
Yeah. And, this is the last week of January, so this is the last of our ladies' night, ladies' choice. Yes.
which, honestly, these movies, with the exception of May, were kind of short on ladies, but whatever. they were the title people, so we're fine. Except one of them wasn't a person, but whatever.
One of them wasn't a person, one was a car, one was a serial killer, and one died in the first 15 minutes, or half an hour, or however long, because I think tripping balls this entire movie.
Actually, it was the first hour, so.
Shit, really?
I think you just blazed through that first
part. Well, it's okay, here's the thing. It's a 2 hour long movie.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's a long one.
There was a point, I think the last half an hour, where I'm just like, okay, they gotta be wrapping this up soon. Like, they have to. Like, what else could possibly happen? And I look, and there's 26 minutes left.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just
That's fighting time.
Yeah, and I'm just like, holy shit. Like, I was really tired, too, because, again, I was really high. And so I was just like, oh, because all my lights were off, because I wanted to give this movie the experience that everyone was telling me I needed to give it.
Yes.
And so I was tired, and I was high. And I was just like, oh, no, maybe I should watch the rest tomorrow. I'm like, I can't watch this during the day. So I persevered, and I watched the rest.
There you go.
But, dear God.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad, especially following up our Mario Kart session with the bros, which was almost as chaotic as the last hour of this movie, I would say.
Almost.
Now, does IMDb,
I am the DMV.
Yes, you passed. So the enchanted lives of a couple in a secluded forest,
Jesus
are brutally shattered. I know. Listen, Aaron, I'm sick.
No, you're not.
They are brutally shattered by a nightmarish hippie cult and their demon biker henchmen, propelling a man into a spiraling, surreal rampage of vengeance. I couldn't give that one justice, but I think it's actually not a terrible one.
Yeah. Wow. You stumbled over every other word of that.
Yeah, it's going to be an episode. Again, listeners, you know, it took a negative test. It says negative, but we'll see how things go tomorrow. Yeah. This one was... I know. 2021! Oh,
2022! It's 2022!
Yeah, but that was a retro 2021, you know, type of week up in heaven here. So,
yeah.
This was written by Panos Cosmatos and, of course, Aaron Stewart Ann. And it was directed by Mr. Panos Cosmatos, which, again, fantastic name. I love it.
Yeah.
So this is starring Nicolas Cage, Andrea Riseborough, Linus Roach, Ned Dennehy, Owen... Foyer?
Sure. It's very French. All right.
It is hyper French. So... And then, of course, Richard Brake and Bill Duke. So, Nicolas Cage and a bunch of folks. It is budgeted at, of course, $6 million and released on January 19th, 2018 at Sundance, which we'll talk about. And, of course, wide release on September 14th, 2018, which we'll also talk about. And it only made $1.4 million, but despite it seeming like a flop, actually not a flop.
Interesting.
It is a success, Alex.
All right, good to know. Let's... go ahead and jump right into it. what's his name? Panos Cosmatos? I think it's
Panos.
Okay.
From the video essays I've been looking at, they say Panos.
Okay, Panos Cosmatos was born to be a filmmaker, and thankfully his father was a very good one. Said patriarch was George P. Cosmatos.
Cosmatos. Yeah, he's affected by... Cosmatos in his teeth, they're just falling out right now.
I'm sorry. He has cosmatos.
Oh, god damn it! He just had a kid!
he married Swedish sculptress, Brigitta?
Brigitta?
I don't know. Oh my god. I'm so sorry. Lundberg Cosmatos moved to Canada and made some of the best action films of the 80s and 90s, as well as their son, Panos.
Yes, they made all those things.
Holy shit. thanks to some hits from his home of Italy, George came to the Americas with some clout and made his debut on the continent with 1983 Canadian horror film of unknown origin. That's the name of the movie. It's not of unknown origin. Starring Peter Weller. It was kind of a flop and was reviewed horribly, but it didn't deter him as he would follow it up with two big Sylvester Stallone films, Rambo 2, First Blood, and Cobra.
Yeah, in which they both became... Rambo 2 First Blood was obviously, like, a huge classic, and then Cobra turned into a major cult classic. So, you know, good on him.
I know nothing about Sylvester Stallone movies.
What? Really?
No. Oh, I don't even think I've ever seen Rocky.
Okay, well, Rocky is amazing.
I'm sure it is. I've just never seen
it. It's a fantastic series.
Like, I understand the pop culture references. Like, I understand it, and I make them myself, but that's just because I'm a poser.
Oh, that's good. Well, my dad was a big action movie fan.
Sure.
Like, a big, big one. So, they were just on all the time.
That's
and
nice.
Sylvester Stallone was a staple of the household, for sure.
Yeah, no, I never got that. So,
man,
yeah.
That's so strange.
I mean, just like horror, I don't know. I got a lot of like sci-fi films or a lot of alien movies, but I never watched a ton of or like a lot of fantasy stuff, like Lord of the Rings or yeah, I never really got into action like just seeing shit blow up or, you know, is Rocky it's a sports movie, right?
Yeah,
my parents aren't athletic people.
I mean, okay, I came from a sports family, so yeah. I guess it makes sense.
Yeah.
But also, it's kind of a cultural icon anyway, so I think anybody from that era mostly watches it. Not everybody, obviously.
I mean, maybe they did, and I just really couldn't be bothered, because, you know, I don't know. Anyway, that's my that was my side tangent.
More things Alex missed out on
in my childhood.
Just another. Let's add Rocky and Sylvester Stallone to the chapter.
Right, it's its own chapter. So anyway, around this time, his son Panos was visiting a video store named Video Addict and was browsing the horror section just to gaze at the covers. Which, who hasn't done that?
Oh my god, my favorite pastime.
Right? Like, me in Blockbuster, just, ugh, what a time-honored tradition. So,
touching the covers without using any sanitizer is fucking amazing.
No masks? Beautiful.
Ah. Oh, I wore masks. They were party masks.
Please.
A little kazoo and everything. Oh, it's video time! Yes!
Damn it, Anthony. So, he wasn't allowed to watch any of the movies as his parents didn't think it would be appropriate. So, he would just imagine what the movies would be like, fostering a lot of creative thinking for the adolescent Cosmatos. Cosmatos. I did this. Like, exactly this. Like, to a T. Exactly.
Yeah, it was fun. For the ones I didn't know anything about, I would definitely imagine, sure.
Bear in mind, my parents also did not think any horror film was appropriate at my young age, so I was not allowed. So, like, for example, Candyman, I kind of was, like, trying to imagine what that movie could be like. Final Destination also was one that scared the fuck out of me.
Man, those had some cool cover art, too.
Yeah, they do, which is why they're, like, permanently seared into my brain. Another one, not a horror movie, although it kind of is now if you think about it, American Beauty.
Oh my gosh. It's a messed up movie, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it's super messed up. But, like, I just saw the cover, which is obviously very, like... Ooh, what's this movie?
Very, very revelatory for a young Alex Webster, maybe?
Well, I was more just like, what, is this a sex movie? And sure, it was.
Yeah.
Kind of.
In a really uncomfortable kind of way, for sure.
In the most uncomfortable way possible. But I don't know, I was like, what could this movie be? And yeah, so.
That would... I mean, that wouldn't get made today for the subject matter and Kevin Spacey. It is amazing how far off, like, what 20 years does to an Oscar winner, for sure.
Oh, what 20? Oh, that's so true. Oh, man, yeah.
Oh, just to think
how,
about
it. How the mighty fucking fall, dude. In this case, seriously. How the shitty fucking fall, because fuck Kevin Spacey. But
how the perceived as mighty,
yes,
become revealed.
Yeah, okay, that's a better way of putting it. I agree with that way more. But just, like, yes. Do you remember, like, House of Cards when he was at the top of the fucking world?
Oh, I remember loving Kevin Spacey. I'm like, dude, I mean, he's a great actor. I like his movies and blah, blah, blah. And now I'm just like, oh my God, I gave him that much energy?
I gave him a lot of energy. Like, I remember the week I was planning on watching Baby Driver. Like, the week I was planning, I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down, I'm going to watch it. And then everything hit the fan with him. And I'm like, well, now he's sullied forever, so.
Yeah, it kind of sullies the movie, too. Oy, oy, oy.
Yeah. Anyway, still haven't seen it.
No need.
So, moving on. Horror wouldn't be too far away, going back to Mr. Cosmatos, as his father, George, would get another stab at the genre with the 1989 film Leviathan, also starring Peter Weller, and it made $15 million and was reviewed horribly. So, George took this and decided to take a bit of a filmmaking break.
He didn't seem to have a lot of success with the horror stuff, unfortunately.
You know, it's not for everyone. So when it came time for him to release his next movie, Tombstone, his son Panos was old enough to have a job. So he signed on as the second unit video assistant operator for a film that would be considered George Cosmatos' masterpiece.
I love it. He's just like, Dad, I got a job at Burger King. No, son. That is a bad path to start on.
You'll be the second unit video assistant operator. That is a 5-word title.
It's like, wow, what's my job? Well, you're kind of an assistant, so can you actually get us a bunch of Whoppers?
Precisely. So George followed up his biggest success with his worst flop, 1997's Shadow Conspiracy, starring Charlie Sheen, another piece of work in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
And this would mark his last major film, though there is more than a simple bad bout at the box office.
So 1997 actually saw the loss of George's and Panos's, well, George's wife and Panos's mother, Brigida Lundberg-Cosmatos, who died after a long, protracted illness, unfortunately. And this devastated Panos considerably. He actually talked about this, saying, quote, "I thought I was going to disintegrate." And he would delve into, like, major bouts of binge drinking to actually cope with her loss. It started a lot of bad habits for him. And within just a few years, actually, his father would lose his eyesight before ultimately succumbing to lung cancer just 2 years after that diagnosis. So he was gone in 2005. He had passed in his home in Victoria, Canada, which he actually referred to as his resting place because it brought him so much success in life. He was 64 when he died. So this was obviously... this is a big downer from the previous bit that we had right now. Yeah. But yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Panos was actually the only remaining member of the Cosmatos family. And this sank him into an even deeper depression. And at his lowest point, he had a major, major revelation. And of course, on this he says, quote, "I was sitting in my living room, and suddenly I saw myself 10 years in the future. Still sitting in that living room, not ever having done anything with my life." Real hard times. Real hard times. And but this moment of clarity, it really changed everything for him. And he did something that a lot of people in the down and outs really should be doing. He went straight to therapy. Straight... Yeah, yeah, he was like, therapist, let's turn this bitch around. And he did. He fucking turned it around. And I'm sure he's still going to this day. So it was there. He decided to use his loss as an opportunity to express himself artistically, just as both of his parents had expressed themselves in the past. So he was going to use this to follow in their footsteps. And of course, this led to Panos to begin pursuing directing. And he actually found that he had a very distinct take on it, and he actually really liked it. And, of course, his style was very directly influenced by both of his parents. So, on this, Panos says, quote, "My filmmaking sensibility is a weird hybrid of both of them. That being his father's popcorn movies and his mother's haunting experimental art." So, huge. And obviously, Cobra is very different than Mandy. So yeah. You can kind of see. Yeah, the
I would assume, I obviously, as previously discussed, I don't know for sure, but...
No, I would verify that assumption for sure. But of course, he actually used the residuals from the DVD sales of Tombstone to fund his directorial debut, the Canadian science fiction horror film Beyond the Black Rainbow, which was kind of a flop, and reviews were mixed to negative. As the years passed, the 1983 set film began to emerge on best of lists and actually started to become quite the modern cult classic, pretty much out of nowhere. It was pretty cool. So Panos Cosmatos was starting to see his very artsy debut film become much more of a success than he initially thought. And seeing his filmmaking was part of his healing process, he had the inklings of an idea for a movie that really tackled what he was going through, his sense of grief. And of course, it had to have a motorcycle fight.
Absolutely. So, you know, yeah.
Right. How else do you process grief?
A ton of LSD, ton of cocaine, and a motorcycle fight. I looked up his mom's
Dad did, bro.
Art, because you mentioned her, like, weird, like, I guess, creepy, hybrid, yeah, haunting experimental art. I looked up her art, and it is experimental and creepy, and I love it.
Right, I love that, like, those two imaginations, those two people, like, they found each other, you know?
Yeah.
Commercial-ass, motherfucking, just Italian as fuck, just grindhouse filmmaker who made blockbusters, and this artsy just wife who's expressing herself in like a very dark way.
In a very
it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, no, it's super cool.
And they're both of them were like, "You can't watch scary movies."
That's funny. When you put it that way, that's really funny.
Right. And he makes Mandy. Wow.
Yeah. Go figure. I mean, you know, eventually they grow up and they're like, "We, I couldn't, now I can."
I'm going to get all the cereal.
And then in some cases, you know, they start a horror podcast.
Right.
Okay, so moving right along, I'm going to fuck up his last name every time.
Cosmatos.
Cosmatos decided to address his sense of loss in a hybrid film idea he had gradually developed over time, a contemporary revenge thriller mixed with a barbarian fantasy film.
That is this. That is this movie.
Yes. The story would take many years to come together, but thankfully he had a fan in Elijah Wood, who utilized his production company, Spectrevision, to fund Cosmatos' vision for the film.
Ooh, Frodo saved the day.
Yay, again.
Again.
Oh, man. The only issue was that they needed a star, but thankfully Elijah Wood was working with just the right guy. Oh, man. So around the same time, Cosmatos was pitching his Canadian sci-fi film to audiences and only fostering ideas for what would eventually become Mandy. Nicolas Cage was selling another one of his homes to pay for the gigantic debt accrued by his reckless spending.
Oh, I remember these stories breaking. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Ooh, yeah. Man, yeah. This reminds me, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I'm so excited for that movie.
Wait, what is that?
Oh my god, that. Okay, holy shit. So Nicolas Cage is playing a dramatized version of Nicolas Cage. And to cover his massive debts, he is being paid $1 million to go to his number one fan's, like, remote island. And the number one fan is Pedro Pascal, playing this guy.
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, that sounds amazing!
Pedro Pascal is not playing Pedro Pascal, he's playing, like, an actual, like, character.
Yeah, like a fan.
Yeah, he's playing a fan. But, yeah, that's the name of the movie. I'm so excited for it.
Oh my god, link me to this trailer, please.
Absolutely. Oh, you're gonna love it. It looks so fucking fun.
I'm hyped. I am hyped. That is fantastic.
So fun. Yeah, anyway, that was that. The reckless spending reminded me of that. So it's kind of based off of his life.
Oh, you're gonna find out more about it, yes.
So, at one point, he was one of the highest paid actors in Hollywood, but now Cage was taking as many roles as he possibly could to keep his head above water financially. An avid Superman fan, he even had to sell his Action Comics number one. He had purchased it in 1997 for around, $110,000 and auctioned it off in 2011 for a record-breaking $16 million. It is now worth over $25 million as of 2017.
Ooh,
which I imagine now, as of 2022, that number has probably increased.
Oh my god, but by how many fold? Because if he would have just held on to that one sentimental thing, like, he could have paid off his fucking debts.
He would have paid off his debts. Oh, that sucks.
Ugh.
So, during his run of rapid filmmaking, he worked along... So, this is during the phase where he just took any film that got offered to him.
Yeah, pretty much anything after 2011, he was that.
He was just like, whatever, I'll do it. Okay, so during this run, he worked alongside Elijah Wood in 2016's The Trust, where they had a chance to talk about Panos Cosmatos' next project, though Cage was a bit skeptical. Panos had no idea who to cast initially, but decided upon Cage via a dream he had, spoken like a true artiste.
Right? I must get this man!
Yeah. Oh, no! Having already liked his performance in Wild at Heart, he approached the actor where he actually offered him the role of cult leader Jeremiah, in which the desperate actor hungry for any role even turned his ass down.
Yeah. Oof. Listen, I'm taking all kinds of roles here, but Jesus, like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. God. Just Nicolas Cage violently masturbating at someone? No, thank you.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, it's probably been filmed at some point.
I'm sure, but I didn't want to see it in this movie. However,
no.
Cage and Cosmatos both had trust in Elijah Wood. And after some convincing, the director decided that Cage would be better suited as the lead Red Miller. And thus, Mandy had its big star.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, it actually took a year between that. So between the first encounter with Cage, and Cage was like, nah, you know, it's not for me. Within a year, they finally got to him, and it was like, they had so, that one combo where Cage understood it.
Is it trust, or is it just Elijah Wood just bugging the fuck out of him? Just like, come on, come on,
come on. Come on, Star Mandy, although, come on.
Have you listened, have you listened to his podcast at all?
Who, Elijah Wood?
Yeah.
No,
what he interviews film directors. He did one. It's called Visitations with Elijah Wood, and I'm forgetting the other guy's name. And Daniel Noah. And
yeah, I don't know.
You know? They did. They interviewed Taika Waititi, Mike Flanagan.
Oh, okay.
Panos Cosmatos, Guillermo del Toro, part one, Guillermo del Toro, part two. This was back in 2019. I guess it might have been a limited podcast or something, but it was really, really cool. I guess I must have fallen off from it.
Man, or something happened in 2020 that totally derailed people meeting up together.
Oh, whatever. whatever. Like, that's don't be a bitch about it.
Didn't stop us, obviously, yeah. But I don't know.
I mean, you could stop interviewing directors, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
They ended with Guillermo del Toro, and I'm like, I would want to, if I ever got a chance to interview Guillermo del Toro, I'd put it on this podcast and stop releasing episodes, too.
Yeah, you're like, you know what? No, we're not going higher than this. No, just not going to happen.
This is the ceiling. This is as far as I go. I'm done. This is my monthly reminder that I live and die by Guillermo del Toro. He's my favorite.
Oh, man. We still got a few more interesting ones for him to put on the list for sure.
Oh, yeah. Literally any movie of his. Like, if it's horror or not, I'll talk about it.
Birthday month, yeah.
Well, I'll talk about Pacific Rim. I don't care.
There's monsters in it. There you go. Counts.
Yeah, right. There's kaiju.
So anyways, now that obviously they had their star, Mandy was originally set to be shot in good old 16mm film, but the producers realized that 1983 was a long time ago, and despite the film also being set in that year, it would be financially wise to upgrade the equipment from the dated, you know, stock. So,
I guess.
Yeah, they're like, we can't use this old technology. It's gonna cost a lot. Mm. Cosmatos was bummed, but thanks to good old digital magic, he's actually able to add some grain to his picture and some lens flares and make it look like it was shot on the old format.
Yeah, the future's now, guys.
Yeah, you just pretend. You just pretend. You're okay. Nicolas Cage's role would actually require a lot of screaming, a lot more than the actor surprisingly was used to. So the producers ended up getting him a screaming coach to have on the ready on set when he just, you know, couldn't get to that octave.
Right.
So,
not unlike Anthony, who told me as we just started recording, all he does is sit around and scream all day.
Yeah, yeah, every day. I don't need a coach. I'm good. LA traffic. So the budget wasn't exactly the biggest for a contemporary film. Topping off at only $6 million. But of course, with anime sequences taking a good chunk of that, because animation is expensive shit. Yeah. The film had to move along at a very, very quick pace to stay on schedule. So scenes like the motorcycle fight ended up having to be filmed in one day.
Yikes.
Yeah, that is some shit. However, there was enough money in the budget to get a Cheddar Goblin infomercial filmed independently for the movie. Of course, directed by Casper Kelly, who had worked on Adult Swim's Too Many Cooks.
So, fun side fact about this. Do you know who has the Cheddar Goblin now?
No, who?
Henry Zebrowski.
He does?
He does. He has the Cheddar Goblin in his house.
That is amazing, and it could not go to a better owner, because that fits his fucking... That fits. That tracks,
yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
That definitely tracks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
That's the only thing I knew about Mandy for a really long time, so I was like, how do we get from cults to Cheddar Goblin? And then when I saw it in the movie, I was like, ah, it all makes sense now.
Oh my gosh, it was... this is an interesting aside for sure. And then the scene that follows it up, I'm like, oh my god, this is gonna be some shit.
Yeah, right.
So, thankfully, though, the film had some major talent behind the scenes, with cinematographer Benjamin Loeb and legendary composer Johan Johansson working on the picture and sound, respectively. I think you're probably right, actually. So, this would actually be Johan Johansson's last... Johan Johansson! No, this is a sad fact. This would be the last film that, of course, Johan Johansson would actually work on after a fantastic run with films like Sicario, Darren Aronofsky's Mother, and Blade Runner 2049. He was actually only 48 when he passed.
Holy shit!
Yeah, he died pretty young. But he, in the last stretch of his career, dude, he was throwing out some fucking bangers. Like, this guy was a composer.
Yeah, it sounds like he was like on the up and up, and then just died.
Yeah, 48. Ah, R.I.P. But the film itself wasn't exactly friendly to distributors.
What?
So, yeah, no one really expected it to make any money at the box office. And the distribution plan was to make everything back through good old VOD, and the theater appearances would just be basically commercials for buying the movie.
Oh.
Of course, this was as the style of the time for low-budget films. Turns out, demand would be just a little bit more than the entire production company was actually prepared for.
Ooh. Yeah. When Panos Cosmatos, his follow-up, finally made its way in front of critics, they kind of loved the hell out of it. With Nicolas Cage's performance earning a lot of praise.
I think he has reviewed almost better than anything his dad did, with the exception of Tombstone.
Ooh. Like,
yeah, pretty big.
I mean, this movie, I mean, yeah, when this came out, everyone was talking about it. And I now after seeing it, I can 1,000% see why.
Right? I was playing at the Frida so much.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Sad news about the Frida, by the way.
What?
It's
what
closing happened? Down tomorrow. Not permanently.
For good?
No, not permanently. But for, like, the rest of January, for sure.
I mean, COVID. That makes sense.
Sure. I mean, I'm certainly not going anytime soon, but it's still sad.
That, and I feel like the clientele that goes to Frida, they're usually Peter responsible, so they're not going to go in the
theater. I feel like, yeah.
They're not.
No.
Yeah. But hey, as long as they survived 2020 being mostly shut down,
dude,
they'll be fine.
Yeah.
They'll
be fine. They scrounged their way through 2020, which I'm so fucking glad they did.
Oh.
Anyway, Mandy initially premiered at Sundance, where it was considered a successor to the Midnight movie, which, listen to our Eraserhead episode for more about that.
Yeah, very thorough history in that episode.
Yes. the buzz was far higher than anyone at SpectreVision and XYZ Films were expecting, and they had to dramatically increase the amount of theaters it would release in due to such a high demand. Plus, the really badass trailer helped. So, and
yeah,
that just goes to show the power of a good trailer.
No, seriously, like that, when I saw that, I'm like, well, I'm going to have to find a way to watch it eventually.
We'll see it eventually.
Yeah.
Though it only ended up making $1.4 million, that was way more than the team had planned, and Mandy was considered a cult classic instantly, notably having a huge run at the Frida Cinema, as previously mentioned.
As we discussed, yeah, they played that shit nonstop.
They
and again,
did.
Listeners, if you're in the Southern California area, you can go... Check it out.
In February.
It's open. When it's open.
Well,
in February.
Well, this is
yeah, because it is
this
a fantastic
theater.
This is
coming out the last week of January. So hopefully by the time this comes out, it might be opening up again in February. But
yeah, check it out next week.
Hopefully.
And then if it's not open, just weep just, in front of the theater and get a beer.
It's true. There's a lot to do over there. It's super fun. Now, what source could we possibly use to determine cult classic status? Maybe Google? No. Yahoo Answers? No, they deleted Yahoo Answers. Letterboxd?
Hey, what?
You didn't know that?
No.
Oh my god, you cut out so bad. you're
oh,
shocked.
No.
Yeah, no, Yahoo Answers is defunct. Gonzo. Deletus.
What? Now I have to rely on Quora? This is bullshit.
Yeah, you do.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, man. Yahoo Answers. Oh. End of an era. Yeah, this is like last year, by the way. So it's been gone for a while.
R.I.P. Oh, 2020 took another one. Fuck you. Letterboxd. I'll take it. I'll take Letterboxd.
Yeah. So, Mandy has a 3.6 rating out of 29,000 reviews, so it is pretty popular. Jacob Knight gives the film 4.5 stars and describes it as Alejandro's Jodorowsky's Ghost Rider, scored with drumcore stoner metal. Paint this whole movie on the side of a fucking conversion van. Okay, Jesus Christ.
I mean, not a bad descriptor.
No. Absolutely. Lana gives it a full 5 stars, saying, Jesus fucking Christ.
No punctuation.
No, none. No capitalized letters, no punctuation. A person after my own heart. Matt Singer.
She actually yelled in text-to-speech, and that it just translated that way.
Yeah, no, that you know, or that's just how some people type, much like myself, because I permanently disabled uppercase letters on my phone.
Oh my gosh. That's for emails, sir. That's for emails.
Yeah, on my work phone, I'm just like, why is it, oh my god, what's with all these uppercase letters? The joke is bisexual people are allergic to uppercase letters. Okay, Matt Singer gave it a more middling review with 3 stars, saying, quote, I feel like I should enjoy a movie about Nicolas Cage fighting biker lizard men more than I did, unquote. That's unfortunate. I wish you had, Matt Singer. I wish you had.
Get more stoned, Matt Singer. Jesus.
And finally, yeah, it's true. He's fucking high. And finally, Wes gives the movie 5 stars, saying, quote, any movie that has the emotional weight to make me cry multiple times while also having a score where Nick Cage lights a cigarette from a decapitated head that's on fire wins this whole making movies thing in my book, unquote.
He really liked the movie.
Yeah. It didn't make me cry, but I mean, I was like wide-eyed, jaw open, like, several times. It's pretty good, yeah. So, with Mandy's success, Panos Cosmatos has obviously... He's gotten a lot more attention. But despite imagining a sequel where Red Miller fights Nazi punks, there isn't much known about his next movie, except that he wants to work with Nicolas Cage again and doesn't want a studio gig. And honestly, who can blame him? When looking forward, he says, quote, where my heart lies is with serving these things that are self-generated. My gut feeling is that's where I'll continue to work on a lot smaller scale, unquote.
I mean, he made Mandy with $6 million. It feels way, way more expensive than $6 million.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know what? Let's see where he goes. Let's keep giving him crumbs. He's gonna keep giving us brilliance. Let's go.
Give him crumbs. That's so... Yeah. I mean, if he keeps churning stuff like this out, absolutely.
I mean, he still got those Tombstone residuals right there, so good. You're good on that.
Definitely. And yeah, that's the movie.
Yeah, so I was gonna do a play-by-play, but there's a lot to talk about, obviously, making the movie. And also, I don't think there's any play-by-play we can do that's really going to capture this.
No.
Dreamy, weird fucking movie.
Just from, like, the aesthetics alone, like, you can't really be like, and suddenly it's like everyone's bathed in red flashing light. Like, it doesn't really translate.
No, I wouldn't say so. The best version of that I've seen was, of course, the Dead Meat YouTube channel, which, I mean, but James H. Neese is just good at doing that stuff. But even then, it's like, you'd have to break, like, listen, he actually had to stop in the middle of the video and be like, I'm going to ramble so I can just keep having these scenes on so you can just absorb what's going on.
Yeah.
There, because it's a trip.
Someone else who does it really well is FoundFlix.
Oh, I haven't seen FoundFlix.
Oh, you might like him. But yeah, I think he does good analyses, but yeah, check him out. And that's my plug.
Okay.
Check out FoundFlix.
Plugging FoundFlix, I'm plugging Dead Meat, we're all plugging other horror creators here, so.
Yeah.
Anyways, Alex, what did you think of 2018's Panos Cosmatos, Nicolas Cage starring Mandy?
Holy shit. So, right up top, I will say I'm really, really glad that I have so many friends who are willing to just be like, okay, here's exactly what you need to do to get the most out of this movie.
Yeah.
So right before I watched it, as previously hinted, friends and I were all playing Mario Kart.
Oh yeah, we were getting down.
There was shit talking galore. It was so fun. But as I was getting ready to leave to go watch Mandy, they were like, "Okay, here's what you gotta do. You need to do X, this, 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 and this, and this." And of course, Anthony's been telling me to be as stoned as humanly possible before I watched it. So I did. I ate an edible, fucked around a little bit, waited for it to kick in, and then I was like, okay, I'm going to watch the movie. I had it all set up. The lights were off. Yeah, that was another thing that I was told was just get high, turn off the lights, watch it on the biggest screen you can possibly get in front of. And, yeah, just enjoy the ride. And holy fucking shit. What a ride it is. I loved it. It definitely... Well, okay, and so I meant to ask you, like, text you earlier and be like, what do you think? How do you think I reacted to this movie?
I felt like you would like it. I did. But only under those conditions. This is definitely not a daytime movie in any sense.
It's not a daytime movie, and it's definitely not a sober movie.
Mm-mm.
I definitely don't think you should be sober. It's a trip. Like, there were certain points where I texted you where I was like, am I really high, or is this movie just a huge clusterfuck, like, in a good way? And it was definitely...
Yes, I remember that.
And I'll tell you exactly what was happening when I texted you that. It was when Jeremiah was talking during the acid trip that Mandy was having, and his face was like half same. Mandy's face, and then half his face, and then it was all his face. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yes. I very much remember that scene. That's moments before someone hangs dong.
Yeah. It's true. You're like, I would remember. yeah.
Because 5 minutes later, I was like, pay ass!
Wow, you were high. Because you reverted back to being 12 years old.
Meanwhile, Mandy's fucking laughing her ass off.
Exactly, yeah. Anyway, so that whole scene where he's just, like, monologuing, and his face is going, like, it's, like, half Mandy's, and then it turns into Mandy's, and then it's all his face. And I was like, oh, my God, am I that high? Oh, my God, how high am I right now? Oh, no. And that's when I texted you, where I was like, what have I done?
Well, what you did was manufacture the correct conditions for enjoying this movie.
And I did. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I will say even if you're high, it feels long. Like, it is a too...
Yes.
It's slow.
No, this is art house as fuck.
It's very
like
artsy.
Art house.
And,
yeah,
I feel like being, like, if I was sober, this would be, like, pulling fucking teeth.
I mean, I think I started sobering up halfway through it.
I remember you telling me that.
Thankfully, it's very action-y, because that helps. But the beginning of the movie, it's two halves. It's like two. It's like how The Matrix Revelations is two movies, except this time both of them are good instead of fucking both of them being shit. So, I fucking hated Matrix Revelations.
Watched Matrix. Which one?
Fuck, what was it even called? Resurrections? Yeah, Resurrections.
One?
The fourth one.
Oh, the new one that just came out?
Yeah.
I haven't seen
it. Didn't watch it?
Here's the thing, is if I'm going to see it, I'm going to have to rewatch all of them, because I haven't watched them since I was like a teenager.
Oh, that's such a bad idea, because they're so much better.
So you think I should just watch the new one and just completely be lost? Because
no.
I remember, like, I watched the first Matrix most out of all of them.
Okay,
so
I feel like if you remember the first, you're okay.
I've only seen the second and the third one maybe once or twice each. Like, I didn't really care for them that much.
You might like this one a little more then, because I enjoyed the sequels, but it took a... They're just kind of like a nostalgia thing for me.
Sure.
So that's why I like them. But otherwise, they're not as good as the first one. And then I would say the fourth is definitely a step below them. Mm. But connecting back here, The Matrix Resurrections is two movies. The first hour is one movie. The second hour is a whole different one. Mm. I would say Mandy's pretty similar. The first hour is significantly more artsy, significantly more slower and more surreal and kind of dreamy. And the second half is really like balls to the wall comparatively. Yeah.
And one thing I really like from the first half is, like, I think in movies it doesn't like focusing or it doesn't linger on silence a lot.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of time to smell the roses.
Right, in Mandy it does. Like, it's like they're very quiet. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of silence. And I was very aptly aware because I don't like silence.
Right? But it's silence paired with some really, really, like, distinct visuals.
Yeah.
Like, really distinct. Yeah.
Like, my eyes could make sounds. Again, I was high, yeah. So that made sense. I was like,
oh. Yeah.
But what did you
honestly
think?
I personally really love this movie. I think it's great. I first time I saw this, actually, the bros just hit me up and were like, fuck it, do you want to watch it? I'm like, yeah, come over. Came over, a good amount of bros came over. We just watched it. Like, well, we got fucking lit right before, though. Like, but, like, lit with the purpose. The purpose of, you know, trying to absorb this movie. Purpose. Yeah. It wasn't to have fun, even though we were having fun.
I mean, yeah.
It was... Yeah, it was to prepare ourselves for whatever it is that we were going to go through with this movie. So we were high. We were high. And we were going to play Smash Bros., but Phil, he forgot to bring the dock for the Switch.
Wow. So
we were just pissing on Phil for and getting more lit for, like, a while before we decided to put the movie on. And we put it on. Boy, when you turn this, all again, dark, projector, sound... fucking up, everybody's gone, and you're with a goddamn crowd. It is just an experience. It is an absolute experience.
Honestly,
there's no other way you could put it.
What I wouldn't give to be super high watching this with the bros.
oh, we can replicate that. That could happen.
That would be so much fun, just because, like, just me, I mean, it was an experience alone in my apartment, like, that was mm-hmm. fun, and I loved it, but just, like, everyone freaking out would just be much fun.
If it's any consolation, it wasn't all the bros, just a handful. I think it was James and Ricky and Phil, Adrian, so... Yeah, you know, those bros. But, I mean, like, there are more bros.
All great bros, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that, if we get, like, the amount of people at for Mario Kart yesterday, which I think holy in total shit. Was 11. let's just bring them all back. Fuck it. And just, Mandy, to me, it really is, like, I don't know. It's an experience, but also, like, you can tell there's talent behind every frame here. Like, yeah. it, this is not a bad movie. Like, there's nothing really bad about it. There's things that might not appeal to you, which you know.
I definitely think it's not for everyone.
Yes, exactly. It doesn't have to be. Yeah. But I feel like you can't deny, even if you don't like the movie, that there's not talent there. This is a barbarian fantasy revenge flick with a lot of horror elements and a very distinct art style. And I think, honestly, even in my rewatch, which this is only the second time I saw it again, it really held up. Mm-hmm. Like, it held up fantastically. And to me, I'm very anxious to see where this director goes and what other kind of stuff he can do, because this is a really imaginative film. And personally, if you could give me a good experience twice, and I mean, obviously I'm not so British time, but mm-hmm. in totally different conditions, despite the lack of sobriety, I'm good with it. It still held up really well. I wasn't as shocked as when I first saw it, obviously, but I was definitely still engrossed. And to me, good movie. Like, it's definitely a good testament to sound design, direction. It's how you make movies right mm-hmm. here. And it become an auteur. So, yeah, I loved it. Do you hear any drums, by the way?
I do.
My neighbor or the people upstairs, it's a band.
I was wondering what that was. I was like, either someone is drumming or violently fucking.
Yeah, no, they do both upstairs. So, I mostly hear the drums, though.
I was so like, Mandy that, moving furniture, like, I was like, there's a lot of options, I wasn't gonna say anything.
just drumming real hard. Mandy has been described as more of a sensory rock opera in film form rather than a traditional movie. Do you feel this is, like, an accurate representation of the film or an assessment?
I don't know, because I don't know. I don't know if I've seen enough rock operas to make that assessment.
I don't think so either. The sensory aspect I sort of get, though, because I feel like it is an assault on the senses via every frame, pretty much. But to me, it feels like he tried to replicate all those fucking video covers he saw in the horror section and put them to film. Like, that's more what it feels like. And so, you know, because it's a still image, he's got a lot of still images there. He's just got good frames, I think.
Agreed. No, I think that... I don't think it's a traditional movie by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's somewhere in between, right? I don't think that it's necessarily a rock opera. Sensory, yes. Not a traditional movie. But yeah, I think I'm going to split the difference here and say a little somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, a little column A, column B. Because, I mean, I get it that sound is a very, very big part of this movie. Mm-hmm. Which I can see the rock opera angle because sound kind of guides a lot of the emotions and a lot of the narrative. What narrative's there? Because it's a pretty simple story anyways. back to the story here, though. Let's consider the antagonist, Jeremiah and his cult, which are actually partially modeled after David Koresh and the Branch Davidians. So how do you feel about Manny's approach to cults? And just overall, what do you think of the villains here and how they represent what we know of cults, at least?
Ooh, good question. Let's see. Cults, a little bit of backstory for me. That makes it sound like I was raised
Alex was in a cult, you know?
No, imagine. Oh my gosh. No.
The branch Webstridians, yes.
No. My first kind of foray into true crime, like, I was really interested in cults when I was younger. I think it's kind of like, you know, baby's first cult. I don't know. So I definitely saw those parallels to David Koresh, especially just from like how. Yeah, agreed. No, that was you. That was you, my friend.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Did you hear that? That thing was loud.
Yeah, that's why I stopped. Especially based off of like his character design. Like, there's definitely some David Koresh-ish isms there. Mandy's approach to cults, like, the movie overall or the character?
No, the movie, yeah. Character's only there for a little bit.
I mean, laugh in their faces, don't get set on fire, I guess.
Good strategy.
It's a great strategy. I really like it. I think it does what we like. It does the traditional cult story kind of justice, right? Because you also see a little bit of you have some Branch Davidian influence. You also have some Manson influence there, also.
With the family aspect of it, yeah.
Yeah, or even just like kind of like the pseudo hippie kind of feel.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, the Branch Davidians kind of had that too, but I think the Mansons definitely have
They kind of have the counterculture thing going on,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the counterculture, yeah, so they kind of have that part down. So I saw both of that, or like the van scene where they're all kind of just sitting in the van when they pass Mandy when she's walking. That felt very Manson-y to me.
That is Manson-y. I would say that's very Manson-y. There you go. Okay.
So, I liked it. I think it... I don't want to say it did cults justice, because, you know, obviously, that doesn't make...
Yeah.
It was an accurate representation of people in the cult mentality also, especially each of the individual family members. Like, they each kind of have their own part to play in the plot. Like, you have the true believer, the guy who is willing to do anything for Jeremiah. And you also have that in the older woman who's also, like, in love with Jeremiah.
Yes.
And then you have that girl that Red spares towards the end of the movie who, like, seems like she's just lost. Like, she doesn't necessarily believe any of it. And once shit starts going sideways, like, she's... You can see, like, and this is where the acting is just, like, amazing. You can see that she hesitates. Like, she doesn't even really talk in this movie, but you can just, like, how she acts is just, you're able to kind of get that story from her, so.
Yeah, you can tell she's in over her head.
Definitely.
And she's clearly, like, somebody that hasn't fully drank the Kool-Aid. Like, not quite there.
Yeah, she's someone who ran away for a summer trying to find herself, found herself in a cult, and is like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be here.
Yeah, like your cat right now, being like, let me get the fuck out of here.
She... See, my cat's getting old, so she can't jump up as high as she wants to. So she's struggling. She was struggling to jump up on the windowsill right now, but she's up now.
Oh, Britannia, I miss you. I'm gonna get when I'm recovered, I will bring her shoes.
Oh. I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
I'll just step in them for a little bit, you know, because they're all sweaty when I walk in.
I'm sure she'll love that.
She'll love it. On that note, I feel like it actually really does a good job of showing, like, the innate cult behaviors and how they how they parlay with their leader. Like, because look at these people, like, they everything he says is gospel.
Yeah.
It's gospel to them. And everything that he demands has to be acquiesced. And if somebody feels like... Because somebody that was like, I don't know if that's possible, but he goes to literally somebody else and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll get her.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he'll get whatever he wants and he doesn't necessarily have to earn it. And I think that's what happens with a lot of these cult figures, too. Like, everything they want is at their whim. I mean, even down to other cult of personality figures like Stalin and you know, with authority. I remember a story from old Russian stuff back in the day that they would talk about how Stalin saw somebody struggling like a citizen and wanted to give them money and just to be nice, you know, despite the murders, camps and all the other things he did. But he realized that because of how his administration runs, they never carried cash on them. They just, if they wanted something, they took it or they got it. And it was kind of a revelation to them. And I feel like that's also the approach with a lot of these cult figures at a much smaller scale, obviously. But if they want what they want, like, they'll find a way to get it. And, you know, when it doesn't turn out how they like, it gets real vicious. It gets real murdery. And, in a way that is cruel, which I think cruelty kind of comes with the cult kind of background. And this movie does a really good job of representing that to me.
Definitely.
Particularly in their leader and how the underlings kind of live with it.
Explosive, fragile egos.
Yeah. See, that's a much more succinct way of saying that. Yes. Very explosive. Very explosive, fragile egos, for sure. Just across the board, with the exception of Nicolas Cage. He just wants to get a little vengeance.
Yeah. just a little vengeance. As a treat.
Just a smidge of vengeance. It's actually a good segue there. This is our first Nicolas Cage movie.
Holy shit.
It's our first one. Yeah. How do you feel about the actor in this movie in particular? And just overall, where would you like to see him go, you know, next in terms of his projects or you know, just Nicolas Cage. How do you feel about Nick Cage?
Let's see. I have always very much appreciated Nicolas Cage. This is not one of his... Well, I guess for my age... demographic, maybe, but National Treasure is one of my favorite, like, go-to hangover movies. I love National Treasure, and I'm not afraid to say it. I always appreciated him. I watched a bunch of, like, I always would watch movies of his when I was younger, or to a fault where, like, if I saw something in it, I would assume that I would like it, and that's how I ended up in a theater watching Knowing.
Oh, Knowing was, that one hurt a little bit.
That
I was
one
like,
was
come on, man,
dog shit.
This is dumb. Yeah.
It was absolute dog, and that is when I realized, like, oh no. My actors don't always, like, just because they're in a good movie once does not mean that they're always in good movies.
I know, right?
It's a hard pill to swallow when you're, like, 12 years old.
Oh, I had one that did that to me, too, where I was like, was that... I waited for this? Jurassic Park 3.
Oh, no. It was
The first two were, like, so good, and they were, you know, obviously they were amazing. I was a kid when those first two were released, and then I was kind of a younger... like a preteen, whatever it was at the time. And I remember my parents wanted to watch a movie that also was kind of weird. But, my parents wanted to watch. They wanted to bring the kids. It was a hood movie. So we loved hood movies back in the day. But I was playing at the same time as Jurassic Park 3, and I begged my I made a whole thing about it. I was like, but it's the third one. I had a pitch, and they're like, you know, it's pretty passionate about it. We can watch this movie some other time. We'll watch Jurassic Park 3. And fucking, we walk out of there. Dad's just like, wow. I'm like, I felt bad. I was like, I felt bad. I was like, I literally came in the car. I'm like, I'm sorry. I apologize on my own volition to tell my family, like, yeah. That was a bad move. Yeah. That was a bad move.
That was man.
Fucking Jurassic Park 3.
Damn. So we've been hurt before.
Oh yeah.
But no, like I've seen his tombstone, Nicolas Cage. Like his tombstone's already built. It's in New Orleans. Nicolas Cage loves New Orleans. Fun fact: he has like two homes there. I don't know if he does anymore, but yeah, Nicolas Cage loves New Orleans, and he has his tombstone is already built, and it's in New Orleans. And I've seen it.
It's just waiting for him.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
How morbid, but also kind of cool.
and definitely in line with something Cage would do.
Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I'm a fan. I'm excited to see what he's up to now. I think now that I think he's paid off most of his debts at this point. So
I would hope so.
And I think he's kind of he's laid low for a little bit, but I mean, since Mandy and now I know this the movie that I just told you about, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. I'm really excited to see what weird auteur shit he's gonna do. Cause you can tell he kind of has gotten like a taste for that weird shit now.
Yes, definitely. Like, he got a taste for it, and I feel like he also gets it more. Well, like, he definitely isn't just going to take anything when he has more freedom in it. I think he's going to be more selective, but also in a way that is weird. Get him some weird stuff. Well, he'll probably really like that.
He kind of understands that most of his fans, like, kind of appreciate that he's kind of insane. and we'll support him in that, and I think he's leaning into that for his brand right now.
Yeah, and I think also fundamentally he's a weirdo, so it really it's a good pairing. It's a good pairing for
sure.
It's
a good pairing
with the kind of movies he gets to offer. So yeah, I personally have always liked him as well. I mean, I saw him back in the day in Con Air and Gone in 60 Seconds and like all these like 90s action-y movies that he would do. So I remember like movie star Nicolas Cage like front and fucking center like all the time. He was in news stories, you know. I would watch the local news, which was just LA news, and they would always have a little bit on whatever he was fucking doing. And he did seem like a weird guy initially, but he still had that movie star status, kind of a figure.
He was just weird and unattainable.
And then I remember all this shit going. Yeah, it was like, oh, okay, it's just Nicolas Cage. He's just like, you know, Harvey Keitel or John Travolta or any of these fucking... Oh, yeah, Face Off.
I was about to say, like, you're talking about Face Off? You're talking about Face Off.
Yeah, like Gary Oldman. And so, yeah, he was of that status, I would say. And to me, I mean, he still kind of is, but he's so much more now. He's so much more his own thing that I think... makes him very, very distinctive from other movie stars. And really, like, the debt thing may have been the best thing that ever happened to him. Like, his career, at least. Who knows how commercial he would have remained had that not been the case. But I think him having to really put himself out there and do garbage and do great garbage and then also do studio stuff, but also do really auteur weirdy stuff, like, it's good for his brand. I think it really solidified him as his own presence, more so than it ever could have been before. I personally root for him all the time.
Yeah. Have you seen the other movie that he was in recently? Willy's Wonderland. It's like kind of like a Five Nights at Freddy's kind of ripoff.
I wanted to watch that one too. I didn't watch that yet.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet either. I know my brother seen it and he really liked it. And my brother doesn't like horror movies, so.
So really? More. You know what? The season of Cage. Let's fucking go. 2022.
I mean, it can't be 2021. I've heard good things. It has a 61% on Rotten Tomatoes, which means it's probably good.
Yes, but also possibly divisive.
So, I mean, but we love divisive on this podcast.
Oh, I agree.
It has a 2.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Damn. That's like right down the middle almost.
It is divisive. Okay. We got to cover it.
Well, listeners, if you want to hear it, let us know because, that's an interesting one. I'm down.
I would love.
I'm down for more Cage.
I'd love to cover it, especially because I think that this one is also kind of like him just being a fucking weirdo. So, big fan.
You have a regular day job in the Mandy universe. What is it, and how do you typically avoid death via biker gangs and cults on your way to work?
Ooh, so Pacific Northwest. I work in a bookstore. Biker gangs don't go into bookstores.
Oh, I love it. I think that's a good way of doing that.
And then
okay.
Cults, I don't know. I'll probably end up being indoctrinated at some point. I don't know.
Right? You're like, I love that book. Who's the author? Oh, that author is crazy.
Crazy. What about you?
Let's see. I would say I write these and I never actually think about them. So off the top of my head, I definitely work at the manufacturing plant that makes the bags for cocaine. Like, they just make the cocaine bags for sure. The jars and all the paraphernalia. Yeah, so I avoid death by simply providing a service that these crazy-ass biker gangs and cultists need.
Ah, okay.
That's me.
There you go.
Yeah, see?
So you're the in guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I do. I smelt the glass so we can, you know, have a good jar for the LSD. And, like, I'm that guy. So that's what I do, you know, and this provides me some protection in case some other biker gangs try to fuck with me, so, you know.
There you, wow, you got all your bases covered. Amazing.
I was just like,
where do I want to work in the Pacific Northwest that fits into this movie? I'm like, ah, a bookstore.
Aha. I'm like, baggies and jar. Let's go. Okay, but something happened, and, you know, you gotta do your thing. And eventually, you actually end up taking over the Black Skull Gang and are looking to rebrand their image. Possibly go by a different name, more in line with your leadership style. What's your gang's name and platform? What are you guys going to do? How are you rebranding here?
Absolutely nothing changes.
Oh, okay.
Are you kidding?
Nothing, you just...
It's all a bunch of Cenobite-looking motherfuckers. What do you think I would change?
Oh, that's good. So you're just the cocaine and LSD, just
yeah, they're all
full stop.
A bunch
you're
of
like, keep doing what you're doing, bros.
What else is gonna change? All I would do is need more leather.
What about still the Black Skull Gang? Or other name for rebranding?
No, I don't. You know what? Black Skull is pretty badass. No, in terms of leadership style, I think I would definitely try to make it a little bit more of a cleaner drug house. Some more structure, maybe a chore chart.
A chore chart, I love
that. Okay. So maybe just a little bit more structure. Like, they almost had something good, but they were lost in the sauce, man. But, you know, in terms of aesthetics, that's pretty much, like, the goal.
So for me, I think that's a good goal. By the way, I like that you're gonna honor
the source material.
Exactly, honor their innate values and really, really just fine tune them. That's good.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take a Batman Returns approach and use them to further my political career sure, and just gain pure control. So that's what I'm gonna do. So I'm basically the Danny DeVito Penguin in the scenario, and they are the clowns. I do like the aesthetics, though. I think the aesthetics remain the same. I put suits on them, though, to be respectable. So they're going to have...
Of course.
Really,
gotta make
really
them respectable.
Really formal suits with spikes just ripping out the shoulders and
yeah.
Shit. It'll be a good day. You know, and they'll be next to me anytime I do a speech. So... It'll be a fun
so
time.
So they'll be menacing,
visually.
And they'll be like the 6'5" people next to you.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be on a box though, so we'll be fine. And it's gonna be a cool looking box that I'm gonna make sure pokes out the sides of the podium,
so they know
so
you're on a
know.
Box.
So they know I'm on a bitchin' metal box.
Are they gonna lift you up onto the box?
No, their hands are too spiky. I can do it.
Oh, okay.
I can do it.
Their
I gotta show people I can do
too
something.
Spiky. I just imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Right? Yeah. So, no, a real Napoleon approach, you know? These are gonna be
it.
My, like, huge, huge, huge bros.
They're your goons.
They're my goons, but, like, you know, with suits. So I think we'll be okay. I am going to definitely have parts of the headquarters just as they liked them, but You know, it's gonna be like the penguin. Like, that's upstairs. When I go downstairs towards the spirally staircase, it's an office. There are people on the phones. It's a whole political scenario.
Wait, right did you there. Really not think this out? Because it sounds like you thought it out a lot.
No. I am simply replicating any scene on memory I can think of Batman Returns. That's what's happening right now. So
you know, Batman Returns scared the fuck out of me when I was younger.
Because it's a scary horror movie. It is a horror movie. It's not an action movie. It's horror.
I watched the beginning, the scene where it's like the birth of the penguin, and I was like, I'm done. I can't watch this movie. I'm done. I can't do it. I can't do it.
I always loved that scene when I was a kid. It was creepy as fuck.
Yeah, I can do it.
I vibe with it.
I was just like, I can't watch this. Oh my god. And then that was it. And then I would turn on like Batman and Robin because that was appropriate.
Oh, that's such an interesting, cuz I mean, we didn't have Batman and Robin when I was a kid until 1997. So, I was 10 by then. So, yeah. It was still there, but my child me grew up on Batman Returns.
What year did Batman Returns come out?
92.
Oh yeah, that was way before me.
That was your time. Yeah, before your time. Yeah. I was still like a child.
Yeah.
And that was the Batman I knew. Well, that and the 1989 one, obviously. But, yeah. I knew, fucking leather-ass goddamn Catwoman and fucking all the innuendo and, gross Danny DeVito vomiting black blood and sentient so penguins.
Creepy. Sentient penguins.
There's a lot. There's a lot that little kid latched on to.
I feel like I got through it, but I blocked a lot of it out. I feel like I need to rewatch it because I feel like I would enjoy it a lot more.
Please watch it. It is so goddamn good. But again,
I watched all the later basis ones. I watched Batman, Batman and Robin and Batman Forever were my shit when I was a kid.
Oh, Batman Forever was amazing. That's still one of the best theater experiences I had as a kid. Oh my god, it's so good. Yeah. But you know what? Now that I really think about it, I can't keep the Black Skull Gang as the name, because politically, that would not be, there's a lot of ammunition from my opponents on the coming from each side here. So they're gonna be friends. That's what we're gonna
Friends,
be.
Friends.
Yes. That's how we're gonna brand. It's a very friendly, family-friendly image that we're going to have here again with the suits. So, it's going to be good.
You're talking about goons in suits with spikes out of their heads named Flens Friends.
And they have a bitchin' headquarters.
Right. So,
I think that's a good rebrand.
This is the beginning of your supervillain arc.
No. Just because I modeled after a villain from my childhood.
Oh,
please.
No. You said this is for your political career. That, by definition, makes you a supervillain.
Oh, shit. That's a good point. I mean, never mind our terrible funding methods. It's not going to be good for anybody. Okay. See? That was fun. Now, I do have one more kind of interesting question to have about our director, Panos Cosmatos here. He has said that he does not want to do a studio movie, but let's just pretend Hollywood somehow convinces him with gobs of money. What franchise does Panos Cosmatos take on? You can do film, television, whatever it is. Give him a show, give him a TV, or all give right. him a feature.
Is it a current TV show? Is it a past
no,
TV
whatever you
show?
Want. Okay. Well, it's one that hasn't been made yet. Whatever. Okay.
The X-Files.
Panos Cosmatos is X-Files! Oh,
that's what I want.
Oh, that would be some shit.
I want Panos Cosmatos' X-Files in the 90s. I want, 90s David Duchovny. Yes.
Oh, give me that. Okay.
Yeah. I want Gillian Anderson. I want, them. And I want him to be able to go back in time and do that. That's what I want.
Oh, great. No, this is... I mean, he can do a reboot, too. It was fine.
I mean, yeah.
I want... Live action Berserk by Panos Cosmatos.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Okay, with all
Wouldn't those arcs be interesting? With his very kind of dreamy and kind of surreal style, but also the action, the bloody fucking action.
Mm-hmm.
Panos Cosmatos Berserk. I think he can do it.
I think so. I might need some convincing on that, but. Mm-hmm. I can see the vision. I can see where you're going with this.
Right. At least let him direct the eclipse.
That's true. The very, very last shot of the movie of Mandy, I really thought I missed something. Like, I was like, oh, is he just gonna be tripping balls for the rest of his life? Did this all take place on Saturn? What's the deal? What did I miss? What what the fuck? How high am I? And then I was just like, I gotta go to bed. I can't do this.
It's just visual splendor.
I think it was. Yeah. And then that last final scene of fucking Nicolas Cage smiling like a maniac at the camera scared the fuck out of me.
Oh, man. It would be such a...
Deeply unsettling.
His style is so perfect for Berserk. I'm telling you. With you describing those last scenes, that cliffhanger at the end, it'll work. It'll work. But, I mean, we'll see. We'll see where he goes. So, with that, you know, I think we're good here. What would you rate Mandy out of 5 misjudged dick reveals?
Ooh. I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
Nice. God damn it, Webster. We're melding way too much here. But I'm going to provide a little caveat here. So, high as fuck, 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
That's under the right conditions, 4.5 out of 5. Undetermined sober. Don't know. Yeah. I don't know how it would play out sober. So that rating, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to just put that in a big old question mark. But when you have the right conditions, which again, listeners, high, dark lighting, no lighting at all, the biggest screen you can find, maybe bros, maybe not. 4.5.
I would say, yeah, solo viewing, I think also, you know, does it good.
Yeah, I agree. Having seen both with bros and without bros, very captivating still, but I think if you're going to watch for the first time, either way, you should be fine.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be good. Just as long as you're lit and no lights and your screen is just in your goddamn face.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, I love this movie. It was super enjoyable. I do think if I'm trying to think of, like, the particular kind of horror fan that would like this movie. I can't answer that question for you. I think the only real way to do that is to just take a chance and check it out. I think, I mean, and even if you don't like it, I think artistically it is still very much worth your time.
I agree. I very, very much agree. It's worth a watch.
Definitely. Definitely. And that misjudged dick reveal is just, like, I would laugh in his face, too. But I'd also be set on fire, so, you know.
It was so self-important, too. He's like, and then this, and then fucking, and then she's just like, oh, Jesus, no.
And then you started laughing, because, oh my God, Schlong.
Yeah. I did.
Anyway, so I think that's it.
I think so. Oh. That was Ladies Month, everybody.
Ladies Night. Okay. Also, I did realize in retrospect, Mandy would have been a great Valentine's Day pick.
Oh, son of a bitch.
It's been fine.
But a theme for February, so you know what? Wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah, you know what? It's fine. So that was Mandy from 2018. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Directed by Panos Cosmatos. Next week, it is February, guys. Holy shit, we're already making our way through the year. Yep. 1 year done and dusted. Or 1 month. Jesus.
I'm like, oh, it's not 2023 yet.
1 month done and dusted. And we are diving right into February with another theme. Should I just tell them the theme?
Yeah, tell them right now. Let's fucking go.
We will be diving into another versus month with Ghost versus Vampires. It's been a minute since we've done this. A couple Julys ago, we did Aliens versus Zombies, and it's been a good long while since we've done that again. So we're gonna revisit format. And that means for the month of February, we're going to do 2 vampire movies and 2 ghost movies. And we're just going to have some fun discussion along the way. So I hope you will join us for that. Anything else about February?
I'm really interested to see who has the better movies, the ghosts or the vampires, because we got some bangers in there. It's actually some very good movies.
Yes, I'm really excited about. Yeah, I'm very excited for this month. And then, of course, March is coming up.
Oh, yes. And that's going to be my birth month. And again, listeners, like, February is a short month. I mean, this month was kind of fucking weird, to be honest with you.
This month was weird. I mean, we do what we like here.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, please consider subscribing wherever you are listening. And you can also leave us a 5-star review on Spotify as well as iTunes. If you're on iTunes, you can also write us a review as well. And if you feel we deserve a couple bucks for what we're doing, we do have a Patreon. It is at patreon.com/horrorpeoplepod. We have tiers as low as $5 a month, so feel free to check that out. And $5 a month does get you a sticker, so check that out. And then let's see, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest on all of our podcast shenanigans, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are on Facebook and Twitter at Horror People Pod, and we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. Everything is shutting down again, so it's not like I'm living, where either of us are living very interesting lives, but you can check us out on those platforms if you feel so inclined. Until then, let's see. Do not let them put LSD in your eye.
Yes, yes. And really be careful about who you expose. Don't monologue before revealing your dick. There you go. Don't monologue before revealing your dick. Just saying.
Ever.
Ever.
In any circumstance, even if it's consenting. Bye.
Oh, Jesus. See ya.